Today is Tuesday, December 28th. I'm Anthony Fest with Adrian Lobby. Our first topic today.
Some alarming developments which are set to increase clear-cutting in California's forests.
She's dreaming of the sea.
Governor Schwarzenegger took a blue pencil to two-thirds of the Fish and Game's budget this fall. With one pass of the pencil, he canceled most timber inspections around the state. Without a budget for pre-harvest inspections, lumber companies, and the Sierra Pacific Lumber Company in particular, are free to unleash giant tree-chewing feller buncher machines. Without state oversight, these companies can cut trees as fast and often as they want, and the endangered animals, the streams, the rivers, they can't speak for themselves. So this morning we have Paul Hughes here to speak for the forests. Paul is the executive director of Forest Forever. Forest Forever helps write legislation, works with grassroots activists, and endorses political candidates in order to defend the ecosystems and the woodlands of California. Welcome to the morning show, Paul Hughes.
Thanks, Adrian.
So tell us, what's the immediate effect of the cuts Governor Schwarzenegger made in the Fish and Game's budget?
Well, it's pretty shocking because the cuts that he made gut the Department of Fish and Game's budget for pre-harvest inspections on our forest lands. What that means is the DFG has been the one agency that stood out and been able to walk the ground and make sure the trees that are set to be set aside for nesting are marked and that stream corridors are protected from cutting, that bridges are properly constructed across stream crossings and so forth. No other agency has done nearly as much or provided as much information for activists, the concerned public, and the agencies and timber operators themselves. And now that their budget for inspecting the harvest pre-cut has been eliminated in all the important areas of the state where big clear cutting is going on, particularly the Sierras and the North Interior part of California, that is a huge blow to the environment.
Paul, why do you think the governor made these particular cuts to this particular agency? What was the motivation?
The biggest beneficiary, let me put it that way, is Sierra Pacific Industries, which is the largest timber company in California, the largest private landowner in the state, and is doing by far and away the most clear-cutting in California, particularly in the Sierras and in the Shasta, Lassen, Modoc areas, northern interior California. They do own lands on the North Coast. The DFG cuts don't affect that, but that's a minuscule compared to the amount of clear-cutting that's going on in those other areas, particularly the Sierra. Now, to answer your question, the Sierra Pacific has been a large campaign contributor to the Schwarzenegger administration. You can draw the lines and connect the dots, but we think that they really got a Christmas present from the governor with this line item veto.
So what about Jerry Brown? I mean, we're just about done with Schwarzenegger, but Brown's coming in with a billion dollar budget deficit. It's hard to take it in, $1 billion. But do you see a way to balance the budget that can, you know, prevent this kind of cuts to important agencies? And is your organization working with other coalition people to talk about different kinds of budget solutions?
Well, we should be doing more than that, more of that than we are. Frankly, our focus is mainly on the impacts to forest ecosystems in the state, which are huge, and the impacts also to our water, wildlife, recreation. The economies that benefit from lush, beautiful forests are much larger and stronger in dollar amount and volume as measured by dollars and in terms of the lasting sustainability of industries such as tourism, recreation, outdoor recreation, all benefits from healthy forests. The timber industry, by comparison, is minuscule and does long-lasting damage.
Kind of talking about the penny saved a pound foolish argument here, but that is a little bit more of a long range when you're cutting budgets.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just take a step back.
Yeah.
I think people don't understand what's really going on in the forest. And I saw pictures on your website and others where the forests are like a checkerboard.
Yeah.
Only half of the squares are clear cuts.
Yeah.
What do you see when you look out yourself in the forest these days?
Well, what the average person sees is not what's really going on, because the timber industry has left what we call a beauty strip along roadways and along streams where you might be canoeing or kayaking, and you can't see through the large intact forest that's left along these beauty strips and see the clear cuts beyond. If you were to get up in a plane or look down from a satellite, you'd see these vast checkerboard configurations on our private lands, and it's devastating our water supply, our wildlife habitat, and contributing very much to global warming. Clear cutting is huge. It's increasing. A Sierra Pacific, the largest clear cutter, plans to clear cut 900,000 acres of its holdings in the next century. That is an area 7.5 times the area of Lake Tahoe. And that is just one company and one form of cutting that company does.
Now, one of these tools they use, I understand, is something called a feller buncher machine. Please tell our listeners what that is and what effect it has on the forest.
Feller bunchers are a large machine that you'd see in a Dr. Seuss story. In fact, he used a facsimile of that in The Lorax, showing the axe whacker, or some such name of the machine. It grabs a tree at the base and saws it off using a circular saw, and then strips the branches off, this machine does, and loads the tree over its back into a truck, and it's all a one-step operation, very quick. Now, feller bunchers operate more on level ground forests, such as in western Canada. You don't see as many of them here. Most of the trees are still felled by individual saw operators, but as we have smaller and smaller forests and more of the big trees are eliminated, we'll see more automation in the woods as well as in the mills.
So what about with the cuts now, that's done. So what options do we have? Are you pursuing the restoration of that budget, or citizens inspecting the timber companies? Maybe you're going to go back to that 2008 bill to prohibit clear cutting entirely.
Never give up on that. That's our primary objective, is to see the clear cutting ends, because it's so destructive and unnecessary. But as far as restoring the DFG budget, we are deliberating right now on the best approach, and it's probably going to be trying to put those funds back in the state budget. You know, in the wake of Prop 25 passing, we don't any longer need two-thirds majority to pass the budget, and so it should be a little easier at least to get DFG funding put back in. Now, I know Governor Brown is very keen to balance the budget, so it's going to be a challenge again, but that's always been there.
So let me just say, that's the Fish and Games, Department of Fish and Games.
Yeah.
And how can the average California citizen get involved? And do you see different roles for the people who live in and around the forests and those of us who live in urban centers?
Yes, they can get more information, first of all, and learn about these things, some of which are so shocking. And there are good information sources on the web. Our web address is forestforever.org. But you can attend hearings, write letters, and generally, I think, get better informed and vote accordingly. There are lawmakers still who stand up and do the right thing in this day and age, and we need to support them, too.
Thank you. So you're listening to Paul Hughes of Forest Forever. We're talking about the state of California's forests. And we had another shocking event earlier this month, where the California Air Resources Board gave another gift. What can we say? It was the Christmas season. So timber companies got approved for a cap and trade regulation, which environmentalists like Paul Hughes generally agree will promote clear cutting and increase global warming. Now, this is a board that's charged with implementing California's new climate protection law, AB 32. So tell me, Paul, what happened?
Somebody got to the Air Resources Board between roughly September of 2009 and January of 2010, because before January of 2010, when they adopted these horrible new rules, there was no sanctioning of clear cutting in the proposed rules and regulations. And these, again, are the protocols, or the rules and the procedures, that determine how the carbon credits trading program is going to work. In January, however, suddenly we had a draft that we were looking at that CARB was considering that awards valuable carbon credits to clear-cutting projects. It makes no sense at all. Clear-cutting contributes enormously to greenhouse gas emissions, not to mention its deleterious impacts on many other aspects of forest ecosystems.
So why don't you draw that out? How does, and let me just say for a minute again, CARB is California Air Resources Board. That's a great acronym,
yeah.
CARB. Uh-huh. They're charged with decreasing carbon footprint. But here's a situation where they're not. And how does clear-cutting really increase pollution and climate?
Clear-cutting increases pollution by not only removing carbon-absorbing vegetation from the landscape, but also leaving behind a decaying organic matter in the form of leaves, detritus, waste wood, sawdust, and also the soils are being exposed to increased rates of weathering, hotter temperatures, more drying effects from wind and air circulation. The soils are a huge carbon pool, which when they're exposed to the elements without a tree canopy covering them, will release their carbon in a fairly short period of time. Decaying organic matter releases CO2 and methane, very intense greenhouse gases. In addition, you've got heavy equipment that's burning fossil fuels, that's moving logs around, and that is not taken into account in these forestry protocols.
It was about 2 months ago that the California voters rejected an initiative that would have delayed the AB 32 greenhouse gas standards. Yeah. So certainly there's indication that there's strong public support for regulations to continue to control greenhouse gases. So who is really in control at the Air Resources Board?
Well, unfortunately, the Air Resources Board, being under a deadline to approve its cap and trade rules by January 1st of 2011, just a week from now, allowed political pressure to enter in and evidently decided to make a deal with Big Timber to bring them on board and gain their support. Before the allowing of clear cutting in the cap and trade rules, again, January of last year that happened, it was required that if you wanted to participate in getting your forest acres counted for carbon credits, you had to have a covenant on your acres, a conservation easement that guaranteed that those trees would not be cut in perpetuity, regardless of the length of time that you owned it or passed it along to someone else. The conservation easement requirement was removed, and when that happened, Sierra Pacific and other big industry players got on board. And unfortunately, along with it came sanctioning or allowing of clear cutting to be awarded valuable carbon credits. When they give carbon credits worth, in one instance recently, $10 million for a 60,000-acre project largely consisting of clear cutting, you're subsidizing clear cutting. And not only that, you're putting carbon credits on the market that polluters in industry can purchase that allow them to put off upgrading their own plant to reduce carbon emissions for a long period of time.
So you're listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, and KFCF in Fresno. I'm Adrienne Lobby, and I'm speaking to Paul Hughes of Forest Forever about the recent decisions which actually promote clear-cutting in California's forests. You know, I think the cap and trade, even though it's been talked about a lot and a lot of environmentalists have been fearing that it's just another scheme for people to make money and it's not going to really help the environment, but it still seems sort of obscure. Mm-hmm. Can you just try to simplify, what's the simplified, most clear version you can come up to explain this?
Yeah, let me put it this way. It starts with a cap, which is that you set a level of carbon emissions for every industry sector that's an emitter, and you say you can't go above that level as of a date certain. If you do, you have to buy carbon credits or offsets to allow you to continue polluting. And where do you buy them? From industries that are polluting below that cap. So the industries that are cleaner are selling the carbon credits on a market to industries that are dirtier. Over time, the cap gets reduced so that we make progress toward the goals of AB 32, which is to bring carbon emissions down to 1990 levels by 2020. That's the way it should work, but unfortunately, a lot of leakage can occur. And the forestry sector is very tricky because we're dealing here not only with a carbon sink, the forests that absorb carbon, also, but also with emissions that occur when deforestation's happening, and many other environmental values that are not directly related to carbon pollution, such as clean air and water, wildlife habitat, recreational aesthetic values, and the industry's tourism, recreation, and so forth that depend on lush, beautiful forest, big engines of California's economy, I might add. So I hope that answers what a cap and trade system essentially is, or supposed to be. It can be gamed.
And indeed, your group is one of several dozen opposing the cap and trade rules, saying that they'll create incentives to convert forests into tree farms. Where do you see this fight going?
We're one of about 50 groups that signed a letter to CARB recently saying that the forestry protocols were unacceptable and needed to be changed. CARB and its effective staff, the Climate Action Reserve, which developed the protocols and CARB rubber stamped them, said that they'd fix these problems, and they did not over the last couple of years. They made some changes around the edges, but still unaddressed are the fundamental flaws. You cannot award carbon credits for clear-cutting. You can't give carbon credits for converting native forests to even-age plantations, and much more that's in these protocols. What happens if it's not fixed is that we set up an example for the world in our cap and trade program that, at least from a forestry standpoint, is a sham and will actually, at best, subsidize destructive industrial logging practices, and at worst, actually subsidize the conversion of more or less natural forests to tree plantations.
So we have less than a minute here, but yeah. I just can't, I assume that there's big differences in the rural and urban approach to the forests. Let's just say our urban listeners, mm-hmm. What can they do to really be effective in protecting these forests?
Urban citizens are extremely critical to this because there are so many more of them, and they tend to be more politically active on environmental issues where we can make a difference. So, for example, in the Bay Area, even though there are not industrial forests around here, any very close, you can vote, you can be active, you can organize, give money, you can attend hearings and all those things in great numbers.
And you can go to Paul Hughes's website at www.forestsforever, that's all one word, forestsforever.org. Thank you for coming into the morning show, Paul. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Adrian.
And now we go to a little music.